The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Welcome to the Eric Metaxas Show. It's the show that Mark Twain once called smarter'n a blue jay what can talk possum and faster'n a naked fat man riding a bolt of lightning. So here's your plain-spoken homespun host, Eric Metaxas.
Hey there, folks. Welcome to the Eric Metaxas Show. I get to talk to my friend Larry Alex Taunton. He's been on this program a number of times before. He is a prolific writer of truly wonderful books. The new one, I'm holding it in my hand, is called Around the World in More Than 80 Days, Discovering What Makes America Great and Why We Must Fight to Save It. Larry Alex Taunton, welcome to the program.
Great to be with you, Eric.
Okay, tell us about this book. Now, you've been around the world. We've had you on this program in the past, traveling around the world, comparing these kinds of things. I think, am I the one that kept saying, like, aren't you going to put this in a book?
You are, Eric, and in fact, I don't know if you've seen it, but you're in the acknowledgments as the fellow who really put the spurs to me to do that. But yes, I finished the book just a few short months ago, and I'm basically challenging the left's assertion that America is a terrible country and that we're way behind the rest of the world.
Well, you're not going to have much to do in terms of convincing me, but I think there are a lot of people listening right now. We've heard the narrative over and over and over and over, whether it's from Colin Kaepernick or from people on CNN. It's fatiguing. If you hear something over and over again, it becomes very fatiguing, especially when you have an innate sense that they've got to be missing something, if not entirely lying about what they're saying. But you did the work, Larry. You said, I know this is true, but I'm going to do the work and the research. I'm going to travel and I'm going to prove it. That's kind of a crazy idea. So I want to start there. You traveled around the world to how many countries? I mean, I'm staggered by the thought of this.
The book includes 27, but I went to a total of 35. But so that the book wasn't, you know, like War and Peace or Bonhoeffer, I endeavored to keep it just a little bit shorter, and I only included 27 countries.
Well, that's a lot of countries, Larry, and I really am impressed. Is that why the title of the book is Around the World in More Than 80 Days?
Yes, we decided, we started this project actually back in 2017, and I literally went around the world in exactly 80 days and visited, I think, 23 countries on that that particular journey. But we decided upon evaluation that we were going to expand it into a book and that there were some other countries that needed to be included. And, you know, if you really make a list, if you and I were to just sit here and make a list of what we think are the genuine competitors for my mythical title of world's greatest countries, we would probably come up with a list of no more than 10 countries. So why did I include all the others? Well, because I wanted to give the reader a glimpse of what the rest of the world is like, not just the top, 10%, but giving them a glimpse of what the third world is like, giving them a glimpse of how socialism, specifically Marxism, has wrecked so much of the world, and also giving them a picture of Christian persecution, of what Islam is doing in many other parts of the world. Honestly, a book like this, it's a book of adventure, but it allows me to write on almost anything I want to write about that I think will inform the reader.
Well, it's a funny thing, because if you live in America and you are not well-read or educated at all, and if you're not traveled at all, you live in a bubble. You think this is normal, and then you can criticize it. It's kind of like the rich kid who, complains and whines, not having any clue that what he has is so much more than most kids ever get. But this is all he knows. And I think that's the problem, is that most Americans only know liberty and prosperity. Even at worst, there are opportunities in America. around the rest of the world, it's not so much the case. And because my parents came from other countries and I've traveled in other countries, I've seen some of it, but you've seen a lot of it. So let's talk about this. What are some of the countries that you traveled to and what did you see in those countries?
Well, to your point, the New York Times asserted last year in a headline, America is not great. Now, the data says that 69% of Americans have never been abroad. And I think that probably of that remaining 31%, most of those have only been to Canada, Mexico, and maybe on a Caribbean cruise. They haven't really seen much of the rest of the world. And I was doing an interview with a British interviewer just last week who was very, very smug and critical of the fact that Americans haven't seen much of the world. And I was pointing out to him, you must understand that for most Americans, travel abroad is a massive and expensive undertaking. I mean, we could hit several countries in Europe. Britain fits inside the state of Alabama. So we could travel by car to France, to Belgium, Luxembourg, Germany, Holland in a day. You know, so most Americans, they don't get the opportunity to travel abroad. And thus they don't have the ability, as you're pointing out, to really evaluate a statement, a claim like that was being asserted by the Times and saying America isn't great because they have no basis for evaluation. So
let's be fair. Traveling around America is not a waste of time. It's a wonderful thing. But the other day I was in Dallas, headed to El Paso, and I thought, I wonder what it would be to drive instead of flying. 9 hours. 9 hour drive. Now in Europe, in 9 hours, you could cover 5 countries. It's an amazing thing how big this country is. And there's a reason, you're right, that many people don't get across these vast oceans, which is expensive and difficult to see other countries. So we do have to say that. But you, my friend, you did all the traveling that we don't need to do if we don't want to. But I still can't get over how ambitious this was. And you went with which of your sons? I always forget which one.
Well, Christopher and Zachary, my eldest son, Michael, who you've met at Yale Law, he did not go. He's gainfully employed. But Christopher and Zachary were available. And they went with me at various legs of the trip. Zachary actually accompanied me on most of it. And he kind of developed a little bit of a millennial audience on Instagram that were following his adventures and the interviews and things that he was doing along on the way. And they provided a very helpful perspective to me, because traveling like this, many people think they've been abroad when they have, they'll say they went on a mission trip, or maybe they've been somewhere in Europe and they're part of a big tour. Well, that counts, but it's not quite the same thing as what we were doing. We weren't on a tour per se. We were plowing into each of these countries, sometimes in very dangerous circumstances, sometimes in wonderful, luxurious circumstances. But all what we're effectively doing, as you've pointed out, is taking the reader on a virtual tour. Everyone is familiar with virtual tours these days. And we're doing the work for you. We're taking you to these countries. And we're, the book is alternately funny. It is alternately sad. It is maddening on occasion, because as Americans, we become accustomed to a certain level of efficiency of the enforcement of the rule of law, which is, of course, being eroded quite deliberately in our own country. But yes, Americans, we're seeing a generation, I think, that would like to burn this country to the ground because they're spoiled. They don't really know what the rest of the world is like. And I'm trying to give them that glimpse. Do you realize how unique the American experiment is? And I'm also exploring, Eric, those questions of national greatness. I mean, what is it that determines whether a country's great? Is it, as the left would tell us, you know, all about healthcare and, you know, access to LGBTQ bars? Or is there something more to it than that?
Well, we know that the fish doesn't know that he's swimming in water. And I say it endlessly that those of us who live in America usually don't have a clue what we have, the liberties that we have, until they start being taken away. And we've seen some of this during this COVID lockdown. you see what can happen when your leaders are a little bit capricious, a little bit power hungry, and they can start enforcing things. And you start realizing, wow, this, it really matters who our leaders are. What would happen if I lived in a country where the whole country was like this and they could just tell me what to do and I'd have to deal with this every day? When we come back, folks, I'm talking to Larry Taunton. The book is Around the World in More Than 80 Days. Do not go away. Hey there, folks. I'm talking to my friend Larry Taunton. The book is Around the World in More Than 80 Days, Discovering What Makes America Great and Why We Must Fight to Save It. I was just saying, Larry, I tell you, just during this COVID lockdown, I just caught a whiff of what it's like when you have leaders that don't understand the idea of respecting citizens, and they kind of act like they have more power than the Constitution gives them. We normally don't have to deal with that in this country, but around the world, even in Europe, there's just tons of that stuff where people are kind of a little bit afraid of, you know, stepping over a line. I remember when I was with you at La Bastide in France, and I saw some trash in a kind of, there's a canal or something like that. And I was thinking like, oh, why didn't somebody just pick that up? And you or somebody said to me, oh, you don't understand. There are special like rules about that. You're not allowed. You can get arrested for going down. I thought, are you kidding? And I suddenly realized, well, yeah, I'm not in America right now. I'm in France.
No, absolutely. Completely different. And France, by the way, is a country that Obama held up as a model for America. And having spent a lot of time in that country, I can tell you that that France is a country that their economy has been destroyed by pandering politicians and socialist policies. I mean, to use France, for example, they adopted some years ago a 35-hour work week, which is not economically sustainable. I mean, this has been demonstrated by economists, but they're appealing to the mob in this regard. And the result is the work ethic there isn't what we're accustomed to here. And there's very little motivation to work. And Americans, again, just simply don't really understand the wonderful country that has been bequeathed to us and what it is that makes America unique. And I would argue that it's the Christian faith that has given rise to America's greatness.
Well, I would agree with you, but I'm curious as to why you say that. Why do you say that?
Well, you know, as a graduate student in history, I recall reading, and bear with me for just a moment, a very famous thesis by a German sociologist by the name of Max Weber. It was called The Protestant Ethic and the Spirit of Capitalism. I'm sure that you've heard of it. It was published in 1904. And Weber was trying to explain the phenomenon that was America. I mean, here was a country that had fought its last Indian war just a little more than a decade before and was now a rising superpower. And how could you explain the rise of these Protestant countries? You know, Britain, for example, and the decline of the old Catholic countries. And Weber concluded it was the Protestant ethic. It was the Protestant work ethic that drove these nations and that it led to the rise of capitalism. Now, in my book, The Grace Effect, I essentially argue that Weber was missing something. And that's because Weber was an agnostic. He didn't really understand the Christian faith that he was trying to unpack and that he saw as the engine of Western society. Well, my argument is that that what Weber didn't get was grace and what I call the grace effect. So in other words, when there's a significant presence of Christians within a culture who are themselves transformed by grace inwardly, they transform the culture outwardly. And it's reflected in the laws. It's reflected in the day-to-day human interactions. It's demonstrated in the work ethic. It's demonstrated in the honesty and trade and obedience to government on all of these things. I mean, historians have long argued that whether or not Constantine, for example, really authentically converted to the Christian faith, that he understood that any religion that promoted obedience to government, honesty and trade and hard work was a religion that should not be suppressed, but should be cultivated. And now we're seeing in Western society that it's being suppressed. And I think that there's a direct correlation between that and the toppling of statues and the burning of our cities and the violence we're seeing in our streets.
I have no question that that is correct. And in my own book, If You Can Keep It, I talk about the idea that Benjamin Franklin, who was not really a theologically orthodox Christian, nonetheless observed, kind of like you're saying Constantine might have, he simply observed that when religion flourished, when people got saved and slain in the spirit and excited about Jesus under the preaching of George Whitefield, good stuff happened, the kind of stuff you'd want to happen in a society. Crime would go down, so domestic abuse would go down, alcoholism would go down, prosperity would go up, all of this good stuff. And you could be a sociologist, you don't need to be a Christian to say that's good for everybody. What is it that makes people do that? And as you're saying, it's kind of like a virtue, right? I believe in a higher authority, and so I do these good things. I care about my neighbor. That's good for everybody.
Absolutely. And listen to this. You know, have you ever noticed, Eric, that around the spring of each year, we see this glut of headlines that are listing the greatest countries in the world? Have you ever seen these headlines? You know, Norway.
No, I haven't.
Norway and Sweden, are always near the top. But this, when you start boring down into these, if you just do a simple internet search on world's greatest countries, you're going to hit all these headlines that you see in the New Yorker, that you see in GQ, that you see in Vogue, and so on, that are listing the world's greatest countries. And America is somewhere way down the list, and Scandinavia usually sits somewhere near the top. Well, all of these, when you start boring down into it, all of these are based upon a UN report that is released every year called the Human Development Index. So it's not based on simply going around the world and asking people, are you happy? This kind of thing, but it's based on something else. And listen to the kind of data they use. Now, this is just read just this little bit from the book. The U.S. corruption index rose by 0.10% between 2006 and 7 and 2015-16, with a coefficient of minus 0.53 in the happiness regression. The negative effect on U.S. happiness is 0.054. Reversing the rise in perceived corruption would therefore raise happiness by 0.054. Now, this, Twain famously said there are lies and there are damn lies and then there are statistics. And you see how the left is manipulating data to get the results they want. In other words, they begin with a conclusion and work back from it. They have already decided what countries are going to rank near the top, and they've already decided what countries are not. And what fascinates me is when you read these reports, you will see, just doing a simple search of these documents, which are hundreds of pages, you'll see that there's zero reference to Christianity, to Buddhism, to Hinduism, largest religions of the world, Islam. But there are more than 30 references to homosexuality in one form or another, transgenderism, all these kinds of things. So you see right away that they are, and I discuss this in the book, that they're driving a particular agenda and then are making these kinds of recommendations how to make America great again. To escape the social quagmire, America's happiness agenda should center on an expanded social safety net, wealth taxes, and greater public financing of health and education. They must acknowledge and move past the fear created by 9/11 and Trump's ban on travel to the United States from certain Muslim-majority countries. Now, do you detect a political agenda in this, an anti-Trump agenda, which is an anti-conservative Christian agenda?
It seems a little bit obvious. I mean, it's a funny thing when even people talk about, you know, rating countries. That is the question. How are you going to go about that? And what does that mean to you? I mean, I just think of it from my parents' point of view, right? Why do they want to come to America? There was opportunity here. There wasn't money here. There was opportunity here. And they knew that if they worked hard, they might end up being able to send their kids to college and own a house and all this great stuff and have freedom, have people not telling them what to do, pretty low taxes. It's kind of a basic thing. It's why a lot of New Yorkers are moving to places like Texas. So it's a kind of a basic thing that people look at. And it seems that the cultural elites that write magazines like this and articles like that, they're not interested in that.
No, they're not. And a very famous exchange between, and suddenly I've forgotten his name, but the founder of the American Communist Party and Joseph Stalin. He visited Moscow with the presidium there and had an exchange with Stalin. And Stalin said, "Why has there been no revolution in America?" And this man responded, again, a communist who wanted to bring about revolution in America. He said, "It's because the American workers realize that they can achieve their goals through democratic means. They aren't interested in revolution because they have social mobility opportunities there."
It's almost funny. We're going to go to break, but it's almost funny the way you just said that. It's like the reason there hasn't been a revolution because there's no need for a revolution because they've got a system that works. We're going to be right back. I'm talking to Larry Taunton. The book is Around the World in More Than 80 Days. Don't go away. I wouldn't let my dear Savior in. Then Jesus came like a stranger. Investors seeking steady cash flow, ready to diversify? NRIA has grown to be one of the nation's leading specialists and offers 10% annualized monthly payouts with bonuses targeted at 18 to 21%. That's right. You could receive steady 10% return monthly payments with bonuses. As their slogan says, they specialize in realty investing done right. You can even use your 401k or IRA to invest. NRIA's 15-year track record and $1.2 billion in new construction development backs you. Learn how you can invest in this hard asset real estate cash flow fund today and receive 10% annualized monthly payouts with bonuses. This is something savvy investors should research and consider. Call now 800-700-5483. That's 800-700-5483 or visit NRIA.net.
An offer to buy or sell any security is only made by our private placement memorandum. Read it first. See us at NRIA.net.
Folks, I got some embarrassing news to share with you, but you know what? This is just the kind of a show where I don't care. I'm willing to lay my heart, you know, on the line. Here's the issue. Mike Lindell with MyPillow, you may notice that I have a bobblehead of him near me. He's here to remind all of us that when you go to MyPillow.com, you get whopping discounts if you use the code Eric, okay? Now, there are a lot of people who haven't done that, and we have your names here. And Chris Himes and Albin pointed out to me that there's like three pages of you whose first name is Eric. You yourself, I mean, that's humiliating for me that even though your name is Eric, you're still not willing to use the code Eric. I mean, if you don't want to use it because it's my name, use it because it's your name. But the point is that I see who you are, and I just feel humiliated by this. Please go to MyPillow.com. It's okay, Mike. It's going to be okay. Go to MyPillow.com. Use the code Eric. You're going to get whopping savings and really high quality products. Did I mention that? Thank you. Hey there, folks. I'm talking to my friend Larry Taunton, who I believe is in Birmingham, Alabama. Did I get that right? Are you home?
Yes.
I am, of course, in New York City, which is a type of home. And I have to say that this book, the idea of Around the World in More Than 80 Days, Discovering What Makes America Great and Why We Must Fight to Save It, it's really timely, Larry, and I wish it weren't, but it is timely because there are a lot of people who do not understand what it is that we have here and why people are clamoring to come here. So let's talk about this. You traveled around the world. What did you see in some countries that we might not be aware of?
Well, one of the things that was quite surprising, Eric, was, you know, I think most Americans think that the world hates them and they're all flag burning and they all want to kill Americans. Americans are quite popular around the world, and so is America, even in countries where you wouldn't expect it, say in places like China and Vietnam, just with people on the street, Russia, same thing. But one of the things that that was true the world over, you get into a taxi cab and, you know, guy starts to talk with you, you've done this, and ask where you're from, and you say America, and they immediately bring up what they know, which is usually politics and something about Trump. What I discovered is that with the champagne glass clinking elites around the world, Trump is hated. But with the common people around the world, he's loved, respected, or both. And I found that quite fascinating. I mean, if you think about it, those people who would position themselves in this country as the quote-unquote resistance, they're not the resistance. I mean, they have mainstream media and big tech and the Democratic Party and Hollywood are all aligned behind them. They are the establishment. And it's the common people in so-called flyover country, mostly red state America, places like where I live, who are more representative of the common man and the so-called resistance. And that resonated around the world, that common people around the world could identify with what Trump represented.
Well, it is interesting. I find that in taxi cabs in New York as well. And it really is remarkable, because if you're struggling and you see opportunity or whatever, it's hard to complain, because you know that you can change it. You have the agency, the freedom to change it. In a lot of the countries that you visited, people simply don't have that. I mean, I even think of Greece, where I was very recently. The opportunity to get jobs, to do much of anything, it is really stifled, dramatically stifled. And you can understand why people would want to leave.
Yeah, well, absolutely. There's very little social mobility. There's very little opportunity to better your lot in life. And, you know, I just mentioned this this listing, this ranking of the world's greatest countries, according to this abstruse data that is put out by the United Nations. Compare that to what I think is a truer picture of the world's greatest country. How would the world itself vote on that question? How would they vote with their feet? Well, it's either Gallup or Pew Forum. I can't recall, but again, I discussed this in the book, did a global survey of how many people would like to emigrate and where would they like to go? And more than 700, they come to the conclusion that roughly 700 million of the world's population would like to leave their current country and go somewhere else. And of those people, 21% want to come to the United States. The next highest country was Germany at 6%. So when the world voted on what they think is the world's greatest country, I mean, where do you want to live? Most want to come here. And I think that tells us a great deal. So while the left is telling us that America is an awful country, and neither you nor I are for the status quo. We see a lot of things that need to change in our country, beginning with the Holocaust of abortion. That needs to change in this country. So it's not that we're for the status quo, but we recognize that America is unique and that it is a great country, and we risk losing it all if we commit cultural suicide and, like a bunch of lemmings, go off a cliff.
Well, isn't that the issue, that the worst part about America is the anti-Americanism within America, yes, that the freedom that we have has given rise to people who are at war with the very best things about us, or who are unwilling to acknowledge our greatness and prefer somehow to focus on those things that we have gotten wrong or done wrong. They seem to be they seem to be motivated by that.
Yeah. Well, you know, absolutely. And it's very, very sad that in such a short period of time that this would be so. I mean, I think of my father, who fought in two wars against Marxists. And now here we are seeing Marxism penetrate various levels of our society, and that it's being taken very seriously as a viable alternative to the freedom and democracy that we enjoy when Marxism has nothing but a murderous record all over the world.
Well, it's an extraordinary thing. And again, Larry, it's the problem with being rich and prosperous and free is that you take your eye off the ball. And the idea that we have allowed Marxist ideas to come in, it is extraordinary. If we were at war with Russia or even in a Cold War with Russia, that doesn't happen so easily. But when everything's great and there's prosperity and Russia and the USSR has become this little thing called Russia with very little power, suddenly you forget that there are wicked forces around the world. And right now, as you know, Black Lives Matter, the organization, they are a Marxist organization, and they have wheedled their way or guilt-tripped their way into getting millions of dollars from corporations, huge corporations. I think we're out of time in this segment. We'll be right back. More with Larry Taunton. Hey there, folks. Welcome back. I'm talking to Larry Alex Taunton. He is the author of a new book, Around the World in More Than 80 Days, Discovering What Makes America Great and Why We Must Fight to Save It. I think it is vital that people know why some of us would claim that America is great. And Larry, I was just saying that, you know, Marxism, which most Americans knew was evil, was godless Marxism, which just crushes the soul. We're dumb enough now to be embracing it in some ways. And Black Lives Matter, which is openly Marxist, has connived its way into getting guilty white corporations to give them multi-millions of dollars. It's just one of the strangest things imaginable to me that we are in a place of such ignorance that we would allow this kind of thing, that it's happening around us.
No, I agree totally. You've seen it, I think. We produced a short video at Fixed Point explaining this, a very short video we just put out a couple of days ago, trying to help people see the intellectual lineage, the family tree, if you will, of Black Lives Matter, going from Karl Marx all the way to the Democratic Party.
Where can people see that video before we forget?
We can go to, you see it in our YouTube page, the Fixed Point Foundation YouTube page.
Fixed Point Foundation YouTube page. Okay.
Go to Larry Alex Taunton. That's T-A-U-N-T-O-N, LarryAlexTaunton.com. You'll see it on the homepage there, Understanding Socialism, Marxism, and the Radical Left's Agenda for America. So you'll find it all right there. And that little video is getting a lot of play because I'm speaking like an auctioneer, you know, in it, trying to go just as rapidly as I can, but helping people to understand the connection between the two, and that to give to Black Lives Matter is to give directly to the Democratic Party.
And to give to the worst part of the Democratic Party, make no mistake. Okay, let's talk about some of the countries that you have been to, because that's what the book is about. Go ahead.
Well, I went to just to name some of them. We were in Singapore, Hong Kong, Japan, New Zealand, Australia, Vietnam, South Korea, Thailand, Malaysia, India, Russia, Britain, Nigeria, South Africa, Argentina, Brazil, Chile, on and on. And we saved the Scandinavian countries, the European countries, for the end, because that's where the primary argument is over the world's greatest countries. But I want to bring up one in particular at this moment because it's very germane to the discussion, and that's China. I mean, we have seen this story that was dropped, this bomb that was dropped by the New York Post just a few days ago, you know, stating that Hunter Biden was effectively acting as a bagman for a man who could become president of the United States in just a couple of weeks, and that's Joe Biden, where he is leveraging his father's position as vice president of the United States for money. And China and Ukraine, chief among them. I wrote a book about Ukraine called The Grace Effect. And on this particular trip, interestingly enough, Eric, just to give people a glimpse of what Marxism looks like, I was in China about 10 years ago, and I associated with the Christian population there quite extensively. When you would go to a church, they would take your passport, they would note your name, they would know who was going in and out of the church and who was meeting with whom. So when it came to doing this project, I was going to go to China again, and the Chinese denied my visa. They would not let me in unless I agreed to sign a document stating I would write nothing negative about China. And I've thought, well, no, I plan to trash China, because China, while it has a huge and growing Christian population, it has not yet achieved any kind of power in that country. And the Chinese, which wield huge influence in the United States, here I am sitting at the University of Beijing in Peking in 2010, and I'm listening to an economist say that Mao made mistakes. And I thought, I can't tolerate this. I feel my heart beating and I'm starting to get a little agitated. And I said, excuse me, Mao didn't make just mistakes. He killed 70 million of his own people. Now, the lecturer stopped. He looked towards both doors. He looked around the room and then he proceeded like I had said nothing. The Chinese hosts who had been leading me around the campus quite literally backed away from me. I felt like Korra, you know, like the earth was about to open up and swallow me. And people were backing away from my tents. And I thought, this is what a Marxist society looks like. Because the lingering cultural memory of Mao and of the power of the party instills terror in the lives of the people. And it's what Americans have never experienced. It's what Americans have never known, at least those who were born and raised here. They've never known it. And those who have come to this country, they know all too well what that's like. And it's what they were trying to escape in coming here in the first place.
Well, that's the thing. Because my folks came from other countries, they told me stories growing up, and I always had a healthy horror at some of these things that I'd heard described. But I think that many Americans simply have no idea, especially young Americans who are, you know, tearing down statues of great men all across our country. They really don't have any idea what they're doing. The ignorance is tremendous. And I'm not sure what we can do, Larry, except what we're doing, continue to write books like the one you're writing, Around the World in 80 Days, Around the World in More Than 80 Days, Discovering What Makes America Great and Why We Must Fight to Save It. We've got to make this case to the younger generation, because they have no idea what they're in for. When you get rid of what we have, if you think this is bad, holy cow, visit some of the countries that you've been to and you'll see what is waiting for you.
Yes. And we take you on in this book, we take you on a tour of some truly wonderful countries that we really, it isn't that we think that the rest of the world is a landfill. But you will discover that great countries are few and far between, and that most of the world lives under some form of repression or totalitarian a regime. We take you on safaris in Africa, and I'm hiding from the Fulani herdsmen militia in Nigeria. I'm shooting AK-47s with old Viet Cong and Vietnamese in Vietnam, which was very funny. Rappelling off the Great Wall of China, riding elephants in Thailand. I mean, we do it all on this trip. You have a lot of fun along the way, but we're also educating you as to what the rest of the world is like.
I just turned to the chapter, Nigeria, the most dangerous country in the world. People need to get this book just for that chapter. Larry, we're out of time. Congratulations on this book, Around the World in More Than 80 Days, LarryAlexTaunton.com. You can check it out. Larry, thank you, my friend.
Thank you. Great to be with you, Eric.
Hey there. How about that, Larry Taunton? Come on. You know, I got Chris and what's your name?
Albin with Albin. A B.
I got to say, the problem that I have with this program is we could easily do 3 hours a day. Phil Boyce originally wanted me to do 3 hours a day, but we have so many great guests. I could talk to Larry Taunton forever. I could talk to John Zmirak forever. And I could talk to most of the people we talk to way more than we talk to them. I just love Larry Taunton. I hope you buy a copy of his book. It's a great book. Got to mention a couple of things real quick. First of all, the phone number for ADF. We do need your help, folks. That, you know what? If you can hear my voice, unfortunately, that means you. So if you've given, thank you, thank you, thank you. If not, please go to metaxastalk.com. We need to give the phone number. I'll give that at the end of this segment. But here's a little fun stuff to leave you with for the day. Last night, now I know, Chris and Albin, you probably saw it. A truly, 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 truly historic.
Historic.
The President of the United States got a third Supreme Court judge justice in 4 years. That is so significant. It's significant particularly because when you consider Roberts, you realize Roberts has become kind of weaselly from a legal perspective. And so you don't really have justices who you can believe are going to uphold the Constitution. And yet, you know that Amy Coney Barrett will. So now there's a majority of justices who in most cases will really stand for the Constitution. And when people say they're conservatives, or you know what? There's no such thing. These are justices. They are sworn to protect the Constitution, to interpret the Constitution. So the whole idea that it's possible to not do that, that's called being a bad justice. It's not called being a liberal justice. That's bad jurisprudence, if I can say so. But yesterday, when they were taking the vote, it was 52-48. Mazie Hirohino, who's a senator from Hawaii, hat tip to Arthur Godfrey. She, when she voted, you're supposed to say yes or no or yay or no. She, I guess it's just a Hawaiian tic. She felt the urge to say hell no. And I thought, what is the Hawaiian word for graciousness or civility? Because I think that's why she said that.
Is it possible she was saying mahalo? Mahalo. No,
I don't know. But can you imagine that a United States senator, that people blame Trump for the vulgarity of discourse in America? I want to tell you, folks, we could go on for days talking about what ultra liberals like Mazie Hirohino have said that is uncivil, nasty virtue signaling toward Amy Coney Barrett for using the term that we all use, sexual preference. But yesterday, what she did took the cake. In this solemn moment, instead of voting no, she says, hell no. And I have to say, that's drawing attention to oneself. No other Democratic senator who voted no felt the need to do that, except for Mazie Hirohino. Yeah. But when you talk about bringing things down, if you want to blame Trump, how do you not blame somebody like that? I mean, that was just, I would be ashamed if I lived in Hawaii.
It should have been H-E double hockey sticks no.
Yes, but they have very little hockey in Hawaii, which probably explains the whole thing. Hey, here's the phone number. Folks, if you don't write this down, you're not going to be able to dial it. And if you don't dial it, you're not going to be able to give. And if you don't give, we're coming after you. Okay, ready? 855-547-5333. 855-547-5333. Let me spell that for you. 855-547-5333. Please call now. Give anything you can. We need your help. It's for religious liberty. God bless you.